ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC Overnight. David Pryor with you. Thank you for your company this morning. We'll take a look at High Country in a few moments' time. It's an 8-part mystery thriller which will star Leah Purcell AM. Now, Leah, you may have watched in The Drover's Wife, The Legend of Molly Johnson, an outstanding Aussie flick. That was directed, produced, and starred our First Nations lead actress. Well, now, High Country, it's an original Australian story set and filmed in a region of Victoria rarely captured on screen, shot in part around the Victorian High Country, particularly the small town of Jamison. It's coming to Binge Tuesday, March 19th, with a double episode premiere.
12 months ago, a bloke breaks down, never seen again. 4 months ago, a woman hiking just vanishes into thin air. You know, in the city, we call that a pattern.
You don't know what's happening here.
You can run.
40 years. You'll be glad to know I've left you all in good hands. I want you to make Sergeant Whitford feel right at home.
You can run.
I know what you've given up to come here.
Dr. Haber!
You have some information on the man we're looking for?
You need to be looking near water.
You can run.
Two rivers, where they converge.
Sooner or later, God will cut you down.
5 years ago, one of the kids from the school just up and vanished one day. I made a pledge that I'd catch the monster.
You can run.
I've got enough manpower. I want you off mountain.
You forced me to move up.
We are trying to keep you safe.
I don't need your protection.
People keep telling me how easy it is to disappear up here.
You can run.
I've seen things that I can't explain.
Sooner or later, God will cut you down.
High Country. I'm very much looking forward to seeing it. We'll talk about that in a few moments' time. I first saw Leah Purcell perform at La Boite Theatre in Brisbane. That was over 3 decades ago, fresh from Mergen. She soon moved to Sydney to star in Police Rescue. I was in the test audience for her much-acclaimed and award-winning solo one-woman stage show, Box the Pony, sitting with the aunties, weeping and watching back a life that had already been fully lived. But Leah went on to even bigger things, starring in Wentworth, and alongside Sigourney Weaver recently in The Lost Flowers of Alice Hart. Leah is a storyteller from a long line of storytellers, going back to the dreaming. The Goa Gungari Waka Waka Murray woman joins me here on ABC Overnights.
Thank you, David.
And we're joined by your partner as well, Bain Stewart, who is sort of the silent type, isn't he really, Leah? He doesn't speak often.
Well, when he does, he speaks a lot and it's very wise and he's the man that's behind my ideas and he goes out and gets all the money and gets all the people on board. So he works very hard behind the scenes. He's the man behind the woman.
Yes, that's right. He's the rock, isn't he? He's incredible. You've only got one speed, Leah Purcell. That's fast. And he's managed to keep up with you. Lovely to have you in the studio too, Bain.
Yeah, same here, David. Great to see you, mate.
And you're a Quandamooka man, aren't
I'm
you?
I'm a Quandamooka man, yes. I'm a Noonuccal Noogi Corrumpal man from North Stradbroke Islands and Moreton Bay in the Moreton Island in the Moreton Bay region of southeast Queensland on my mother's side. And I'm a coal miner's son on my dad's side in the Hunter Valley, Cessnock, Swansea. So,
right.
Yeah, I'm an interesting mix.
I bet. You're a good bloke too at that. And I grew up at Darug country and then we went to Kamilaroi outside of Moree, a little place called Palamala War.
Right.
And all the Gomeroi boys, they taught me how to fish and hunt and I just loved it. Leah and yourself, I've known for years too, particularly up in Brisbane, Meanjin. And now here we are on Gadigal country. Welcome.
For our little session here, we'll give acknowledgement to the Gadigal lands that we're on and we pay our respects to the elders past and present and emerging and to the ancient ancestors for guiding us. And my name is Leah Purcell. I'm a Goa Gungari Waka Waka Murray woman. Living on Gadigal Wangal country for a long time. I sit and rest and create there.
And create you do. My goodness, you don't stop creating, do you? It's a long way from Mergen down that yellow brick road that you've travelled.
Yeah, no, I don't stop actually because I just love it. And the funny thing is when people say, what do you do for a downtime? I say, I go right. So, but it's a way to wind down. It's just something that I love getting lost in, you know, and especially when I'm making up my stories, you know, when you can just go off on a fantasy and look, who knows what, you know, people are going to see or hear about. But this first half of this year, 2024, I've wanted to put about 3 months aside to catch up on some of my projects and finish them up and get them going, give Bain something to do.
Yeah, keep him busy, right?
Yes, exactly.
As if you're not busy enough, my God.
Go out there and do a bit of door-to-door sales.
Congratulations on the success of, well, let's start first with The Drover's Wife, the story of Molly Johnson, because that was just a great flick. Yeah. Tell me a bit about putting that together.
It started in 2014. I was a director in a writer's workshop and I was getting a bit frustrated with the writers. So I said, instead of taking my frustrations out on them, maybe it's time that I was to write again. And it had been a while. And it was a Friday night and I went home and on my bookshelf, I've got a bookshelf of I Must Do Something With These One Day, and there was the little book of my mother's, which was Henry Lawson's short story, and it's got a red spine, and it was just sticking out that little bit further, and I plucked it, and I went, it's time. But I said to Bain, we always said I'm going to do something with Drover's Wife. It was a story my mother told me when I was 5 years old.
Yeah.
It was a story that I connected to visually, and I think that's why I remembered it. I was that little boy protecting his mother. Some of the life that the drover's wife and her son did, you know, reflected me and my mum. I mean, it was just me and my mum at home. We lived on the outskirts of Mergen, so we had a combustion stove. There was a wood heap. My mum taught me to split the logs.
Yes.
And she would say, don't stack it, holler, or the snakes will
get in
under.
Snakes get in there, yeah.
That's it. So it just really resonated, and I held that for that long. But when I pulled the book out, I said, oh, Bain, I'm gonna sit down and I'm gonna write something. I don't know what. I said, but it's Drover's Wife. And I said, but I'm not going to read it. I put it beside my computer, the keyboards, and I said, I'm just going to see if I can remember the stories, the way my mother told it to me and what really resonated and what comes from that. And away I went. I started with monologues. And 2016, at the end of that year, I put it into the Belknaves Fellowship at Belvoir. They only needed 15 pages and I had 15 pages. And I said to Bain, it was about 3:30 and I rung him up on a Friday arvo and it was that deadline. And I said to him, what are you doing? He goes, oh, what are you doing now? And he, you know, exhaled and I said, I need you to fill an application in by 5 o'clock. So I think we pressed the go button at 4:49 and we got it in. And the only note we got back from Belvoir was what happens next. So we won that, which allowed us to have dramaturg input. And then if all went well and the show was worth something, we could get it on the main stage at Belvoir, which we did, opened 2016. You want to pick the story up from there?
It was rave reviews, wasn't it, Bain?
Yeah, well, you know, it was one of those things. And I put it down to, you know, finally the coin starting to drop as a producer, me. I was just sitting in the rehearsal rooms and watching the reaction with the script.
Yes.
And then I went to the previews and I was watching the reaction from the audience and it was pretty amazing. And I went, I've got to load opening night up with everybody because what Leah hasn't told you at this point is I told her I thought it would make a great film, even at that point, because
right.
I read the outline for the play and I went, this bloody meat reads like a Chan of Jimmy Blacksmith meets Deadwood meets Django sort of thing.
Yeah.
And she said, well, let me write the play first, you know.
Yeah, right.
And
Small steps. Yes.
But she started writing the screenplay in rehearsals and I thought, okay, we've got the play up. I'm going to load that audience up with everyone from the screen and film sector. So I had Graham Mason, the CEO of Screen Australia, Sophia Zakharou, the CEO of Screen New South Wales. I loaded it up with film types and professionals and publishing editors from the big publishing houses. The funny thing about opening nights, you never quite know what's going to happen, you know.
Yes.
Sometimes they sit on their hands, sometimes whatever.
Yeah.
But it was I don't know if you've seen the show, David.
I haven't seen the stage show, but
yes,
I love it.
Yeah, well, the stage, it was an amazing show and performance. And when it went to dark and then it came back up, everyone just jumped to their feet, and it was five encores, seven, 8 minutes standing ovation. Wow. And I went and I looked at Graham Mason, and I went, "You're in for a penny, in for a pound now, mate." And metaphorically, I'd got him in a full Nelson MMA style. I never let him go until I got all the money out of him I needed from Screen Australia. But he was in. He looked at me and went. But it was, like you said, we did that season at the end of 2016. We only ever did 33 shows.
That's incredible.
That's all it ever did.
Yeah, but that reverberated everywhere.
No, we were meant to go all over the place, but Leah got picked up to do Wentworth.
Oh, yes,
and then
of
she
course.
Was carted off to do that for three seasons in the middle of COVID.
Yes.
When Melbourne was the most locked down city on
Terrible.
On the
really
in the world.
Really suffered the most, yeah.
And for good reason, and
even
all
when
the
you
rest
use the
of it.
Words now, lockdown is triggering.
Triggering,
exactly, and so
that's what put us back with the
So we did the play, and then Leah moved on to Wentworth, and we were doing other things, and then all of these award nominations started coming in for the play, from the Victorian Premier's Literary Awards. So when, how do they know about? I mean, it only did that small, and it was a couple of people from the Wheeler Centre in Melbourne had come and seen it, said, you just must submit it. And then, and for the first time ever, the Walkleys had a Walkley Award for theatre criticism, and we won the Walkley for that, for who the person who reviewed the play and what they said about it. Because it was, you know, Leah Purcell declares war on Australia's historical amnesia.
Ah, yes.
And that sort of thing, you know, and it was like, and so.
That's the thing, we have had amnesia, haven't we, really? We haven't delved into these stories enough.
What Leah did, there was a couple of genius things that Leah did with that our most famous short story, The Drover's Wife.
Yes, Henry Lawson.
Yeah, Henry Lawson, exactly. Leah took the black snake out of that story and put her black great-grandfather in there, Yadigar.
Yes, because that's the thing, isn't it, Leah, that the story is actually based on real-life characters.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's Leah's family history, and so much so that and the other huge thing that Leah did was gave the drover's wife a name, Molly Johns. Lawson never gave her a name, and they're both, you know, Leah's great-grandmothers, and bit of her mother and aunties and all the rest of it.
Yeah, and the characters. And
so she flipped the whole story on her head. She Trojan horsed this First Nations story in there. Audiences were coming to actually see the literal interpretation of Lawson's story that they loved. And then, you know, like in the third minute of the play, Molly Johnson breaks water on stage because she's heavily pregnant. Everyone, I don't remember that. Do you remember that?
Yadigar
stumbles onto the stage with neck irons on the run because the native police are sweeping the district, killing, all the black fellows in the district. Mm. And then all of a sudden the audience don't know what's going, but it's too late. They're locked into their seats like they're at, you know, Dreamworld.
Yeah.
And they're in for the ride for the next 70, 80 minutes. And the play just has all these twists. But it's not what they expected. And at the end, because you know what happens, and for those that don't. But like I say, then it went on this tear, won everything at the very Victorian Premier's Literary Best Play, Prize for Literature.
Yeah.
Then it won at New South Wales, Book of the Year. First time ever a play had won Booker. That's Tim Whitten, David Maloof territory.
Yes.
So this play won Book of the Year, Play of the Year, of course, all that sort of stuff. Then it won all the Orgies, which is the Australian Writers Guild Awards.
That's right.
Then it won all the Helpmans. So we're at the Helpmans Award. I'm sitting next to people. They're going, "You remember when that came to Adelaide or Melbourne or whatever?"
Right.
I said, "Mate, it never got out of Surry Hills."
Yes.
Because it was winning Best Play, Best Director.
And people were turning up and they were talking about it. The reverberation, as I say, was everywhere.
Huge buzz.
But like yourself, Leah, some of us knew that you were absolutely a star long ago. Le Boite Theatre, I remember you performing up on stage. It was a premiere night. It was a night of play, and then suddenly you're performing in the corner, singing songs, and I thought, this girl is something special. So I grabbed you, we went down the radio station and had a chat, and then along came Box the Pony. Mm. Now, you put me in the test audience. I think I had your aunties around me that were weeping at the time, and they were, you know, he was a story of a life that had already by that stage had been really incredibly lived, yet there was so much more to come. But we could see your potential back then, back in just after Mergen, when you came to Brisbane and before you even came to Sydney, and Box the Pony was another of your plays that was huge.
Look, it was just... It was an opportunity that came about with Festival of the Dreaming. They were a play short, and Rhoda Roberts was producing six women's shows. And I met Rhoda and her husband Bill at the time at a barbecue, and we got talking, and she said, "Leah, you tell a good yarn. Why don't you tell your life story, you know?" And I said, "Oh, I'm not a very good speller." And she said, "That's all right. We can work that out." And so I had that opportunity, and it was and I probably felt like I was the only First Nations person that wasn't working at that time, because everyone was getting a job. And I literally went to her and said, "Rhoda, I'll clean the bathrooms. I'll be a stage manager. I just want to be a part of that process." And then within 9 months, I'm opening at the Opera House with no previews to my first audience outside of Queensland at the Opera House. Incredible. In the drama theatre. And I just...
And it was standing ovation.
Oh, yes. It was as scary as. Like, I remember, and I looked at my stage manager when I was going on, I said, "I can't do this." She goes, "Yes, you can." And she said, and then I started laughing, and I said, "Well, I'll see you in an hour and 10 or 10 seconds. She said, "Let's try the hour and 10. And she pushed me out in the dark, and I just remembered this whirlwind of my performance voice, these other voices in my head, the reaction of the audience. They were really tense and a bit scared, and then I just, my first line was, "G'day," and you just seen them all relax, and I went, "Oh, look at this," and then away we went on this journey, and then I at the end, they stood, they clapped, I did the bow, and I went, "Okay," and I walked off, and I was heading back to my dressing room. The stage manager grabbed me again, and I go, "What are you doing?" She goes, "Get back out there." I said, "Why?" She said, "It's a standing ovation." I said, "What does that mean?" She said, "They like you." And she pushed me back out, and she pushed me back four more times.
Yeah,
and I just couldn't believe it. And I said, "What does this mean?" She goes, "They love you. Get out there."
Yeah, that's right.
And it's sort of, and I was very, very lucky. And, you know, thanks to Rhoda for giving me that opportunity. And then we were both proactive in my career, and making sure that we told the stories to give myself that job. And we are big advocates for First Nations people telling our stories for our people.
You came to Sydney from Meanjin, and as I say, the aunties were around. They were crying and enjoying watching what your life was up on stage. But there was so much more to come. Wentworth, there was Redfern Now. You're talking about telling your stories. Redfern Now was revolutionary.
Mm. Yeah, no, it certainly was. And from the executive producers to majority of the crew that was on set, they were all First Nations people, First Nation writers, directors, all lead actors were First Nations. And those stories came from, I guess we were truth-telling before the word became fashionable, wasn't it?
Yes.
And, well, you know, I was truth-telling right back in 97 with Box the Pony. It was my story, my mother's story, my grandmother's story.
Was it 97, Mike?
Yes, it was the first one.
You know, I still remember lines from it about Elvis Presley, how great thou art.
Exactly. So, you know, and the industry has been going from strength to strength, I think, you know. I'm about to go down to do in Melbourne the Black and Bright First Nations Literary Festival, and I was speaking to the arts director today, and she said there's 80 published First Nations writers from around Australia.
Oh, isn't that wonderful?
And I said, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's Jane Harrison, who Leah was talking to, who wrote Stolen and who just wrote The Visitors.
So I went, that is absolutely phenomenal. So I'm so excited because she's been trying to get me down there for the last 4 years. And, you know, finally the stars aligned. And I said, I'd love to come down. I'm doing the keynote speech on the 14th of March. But just to know and then to look at the program, you just go, holy moly, look at all these doctors, professors.
Yeah, sitting there watching you.
And talking. You know, I said, I'm going to go and learn a few things too from them. So it's just amazing. So, you know, anyone down there in NAM, you know, most of the sessions, a lot of the sessions are free. And so, you know, get out and support it and come and hear the stories. And Jane said to me, she goes, you know, and I always say it too, our Indigenous stories are all Australian stories.
Absolutely.
Come listen and be a part of the journey for healing.
Yeah, see, I used to sit and listen to the Gomeroi boys, and they'd be telling stories. Some of them would scare the pants off you about the Kadaichi man. I don't want to go there talking about pointing bones and things like that. But, you know, these guys, they had the stories I loved listening to.
Yeah.
And you are now giving a platform for those stories to come out. And as you say, truth telling.
Yeah. Look, it's just part of my DNA, you know, our DNA. You know, Bain's doing it from the business side. But as blackfellas, you know, my family were always the storytellers when we would be at a party. And I was, you know, it was before technology came in. So I was very fortunate to be probably one of those last generations where you actually did sit around and listen to the stories. It might have been around a carton of Forex, but, you know, they were beautiful stories. And I'm just so glad that I retained those stories and can utilise them in my storytelling today. And it's just a great, you know, whether it's through film, whether it's through stage, whether it's through a novel, it's a great way to keep those stories alive for a very, 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 very long time to come. And we've got a platform that can reach millions of people. So it's, you know, I'm very lucky to be, you know, to have been born when I was and had the opportunities that I have where my mother and, you know, my grandmother didn't have those opportunities, you know. So
they'd be smiling on you for sure. And you obviously have an affinity with the high country, particularly this coming series, but also The Drover's Wife was set in the high, beautiful country where you set that film.
Mm. Yeah.
Tell me about picking the locations.
I'll start first, then you can jump in. Yeah. Well, we were first up there when I did Jindabyne, the film.
Yes, of course.
Up in the snowy mountains.
Yes.
And Bain and I would go for a drive and we went up to Mount Kosciuszko and I fell in love with it. I said, we don't utilise this landscape enough in our storytelling. And my dreaming, but I didn't know it at that time, but my dreaming's associated with mountains. And so I'd just always drawn to mountains. So I said, I think I've got to come back here. I think I've got to do something. So we got up the top of Mount Kosciuszko and I yelled out, I'm going to come back. I'm going to do something. I think it's Drover's Wife. And I think I'm going to be in it, echoed around the mountains.
Beautiful.
And then you cut to 2019 and literally on the opposite mountain range, I'm singing out action and cut to the film. I said I'd do it and that was 2019. No, when I did Jindabyne.
That was a while back.
2006, maybe?
Maybe even before then.
Because I held on to, you know, the story for so long and I had to wait for the time was right. Or whether when I was mature enough to receive it, to do it justice. And I believe my mother blessed me with that by giving me that book. Because when I left Mergen, I wasn't in a very good situation. And the one thing I made sure I took from that house was that book. because at that time I wasn't going, oh, one day I'm going to do a film. I was just worrying about when my next meal was and where I was going to sleep that night with my daughter on my hip, you know. So it was a blessing from her and it's blessed us with then Bain coming along, looking at our IP and saying we can really, really work this to our advantage. You know?
Well, I was doing martial arts at the time and when I met Bain, I couldn't believe it because you're a martial arts, your background is kickboxing and you're an Australian champion as well.
Yeah. Well, when I first picked up with Leah back in 91.
Wow.
I was running my own gym business called the Fight Centre.
Yes.
In West End in Brisbane.
Yeah.
I was training corporates and training actual fighters, taking them over to Japan and New Zealand and around Australia. Yeah. And
you had my utmost respect. Absolutely.
But that's what I was because I'd, you know, trained in the martial arts and worked in security and did this, that, the other. And then I'd met Leah, and I, you know, when you're with somebody, you know, when you're in love with somebody, yes, like I was with her,
yeah,
you know, I was just trying to help her, and she just had these aspirations to sing and act and all that, so, that sort of thing. And, you know, I'm not there to diminish those sort of, you know, because I've been around fighters and they have dreams and
yeah,
those sorts of things. Oh, yeah. And so I was just trying to help her. And some of that was just picking up the phone and talking to her. Now, I didn't know what I was talking about. I was a manager agent, you know, for fighters and, you know, combat athletes and that sort of thing.
And along comes this actress.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden I'm talking to casting agents or producers or whatever, you know, and wow, it's just, and I had more front than Myers, you know, like I was there, oh, you know, but it's just, you know, I just knew how to talk to people and, yeah, and I walk indoors that, you know, a lot of people might not with the limit, lack or limited experience.
Hey, Leah, he's a big fellow, isn't he? You don't yeah, say yeah, no to him very often. No.
Well, you've got to have a certain way about you as well, you know. Yes. And so, you know, I was just trying to help her until we could find somebody to assist yeah, her with what she wanted to do.
Bain took me to my first theatre show, like oh, other than doing theatre at in Mergan High School when I was in it,
yeah,
but to actually sit and watch. And one of our first dates was to go to La Boite, and we
in
watched
the round.
In the round, and guess yeah, what we watched? Great Bouncers. And Bain, oh, and Bain was doing, so it was,
hey, that's
it
not was right, a great, that's
it
was not
a,
right, yeah,
and it yeah, was a great show too, it was yeah, a comedy. Yeah,
and La Boite always had the best show.
Oh, yeah, it was yeah, a fantastic theatre back little, in the day. Yeah.
Back in the day there. So, you know, and that sort of introduced me, and I went, oh, wow, yeah, this is yeah, this is great. And then he heard me singing in the shower at his place, and he said, gee, you got a really great voice, you should do something with it. I said, look, I'm already sleeping with you, it's all right, you don't have to get me up. But then he went for a road run and came back with this little pamphlet that said Murray Music Workshop, and for 8 weeks, and he said, why don't you go? And I said, nah, they'll probably be all my uncles and they'll run amok. But I decided to go, and it was the best thing I could have done. I was, for 8 weeks, we sat around, there was a band, we could sing, we wrote songs, and we actually came up with a little tape deck of Sharing the Load, where we got to do it recording. So Bain has been, you know, if it wasn't for Bain, then I don't know if I actually would be sitting here doing what I'm doing. Nice, so it was, yeah, you know, and I dreamt about him for a year before I met him. Yes. I didn't see his face, but I saw this big fellow and the blonde hair back in the day, and
had the idea
fit, that, and yeah, then yeah, and then in he came. So I think there was a bit of fate.
She did this workshop, and an outcome of that was somebody shot a video clip of something that, and they showed it on Rage at like 4 o'clock in the morning. Michael Leslie was the choreographer for Brand New Day.
Right.
He watched it and he said, I've got to audition that girl because I was about to do a national tour. Paul Keating had sunk $1 million into Brand New Day, Year of the Indigenous People, 93, 94.
Gosh.
So Leah wins this national casting sort of for Marijuana Annie. And, you know, I won't mention some of the big names she rolled, but she did.
Yes.
And the rest is history. I think she was the only performer to do... She never missed a night. It was like 137 consecutive shows around the country.
Wow.
So she did that and went into La Boite and Police Rescue. And she did a show called Daniel Low at La Boite. Of which
it was Low that I saw you
yeah,
in.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and, yeah, yeah. And so Leah was recently nominated for another Matilda. So it was 30 years ago to the year
wow,
that Leah was not won Best New Performer for Low. A Matilda.
Talent,
you
eh?
Know, I still have a DAT tape of you and myself and an interview that we did, and you sang I Am Woman at wow, that time. Remember
yeah,
recording that?
Yeah.
When was this? About 93, 94?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, Leah shot a 94 clip for Blackout back in the day. In my gym and around.
Yeah, I will, but oh, you look and I cringe now. The vocals were okay, but the things we did, eh? Gosh, don't anyone go and find those. Someone will go through the archives here at the ABC and look for it on Rage.
In fact, I've been working with Indira Naidu for about 3 years. Her husband is Mark Fitzgerald, mm-hmm, who put Rage together. He was the creator of Rage. So
yeah,
it's kind of a circle moment.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Well, Michael Leslie saw that, and Leah did Brand New Day, and the Brand New Day took her around the country, but Anne Robinson from Sue Mullen was in the audience for Low one night, and she gave Leah a card. She said, if you're ever in Sydney, ring me, you know. And so Leah won an, again did a national audition for
Galaxy
Pay TV, the new, which is the music channel on,
yeah, you
on
were
Foxtel.
A VJ,
she was
you?
A VJ, yeah.
One of the very first
Jabba,
VJs.
Tony Perrin, and
yes,
Leah.
Yes.
Leah Soul Kitchen.
Yeah, Leah Soul
yeah,
Kitchen.
And that got her to Sydney, and she went in to see Anne, and she auditioned for Police Rescue, got it. But Leah had mad dreadlocks and a nose ring.
Oh, yes.
And they said, what are we gonna do with you? She said, just pretend I'm an LA cop. You know, they all have dreads.
Spot
and
on.
I'll take the nose ring out, I'll put my hair up, and
yeah. Away we
and
went.
I go to work. I put the uniform on, and she was in the biggest show on Australian TV at the time. Gary Sweet was the biggest star.
Yes, he was.
And that was her entree into Australian TV, and that final BBC, ABC. So and then bang, it's just and then Box the Pony, bang, and then
Redfield,
Lantana, bang,
as well. That was
you know,
a great movie.
That's your Proposition and those sorts of shows and tons of theatre. But
I loved you in Black Comedy. You were
that was fun.
The Welcome to Country.
Yeah.
You were Auntie Mary, wasn't
Auntie
you?
Mary,
her and Deb Malman. Yeah. And I say to people because Leah's just worked with Aaron Pedersen in High Country. And they and Leah, Deb, and Aaron have been around for 30 years together, but they've never worked together.
Oh.
They've never shared a screen. This is the first time that Leah and Aaron have shared a screen together. Mm. And that was the first time Deb and Leah had ever shared a screen together. I mean, it's criminal.
It was so fun to do because comedy's so hard, but it was unreal. When especially when me and Deb, you know, had the opportunity to be the aunties and have a go at one another, you know, the crying scene,
trying to outdo each other.
You know, and then we were playing when we were like the Sopranos sitting in the Italian shop and I knocked over the flour. You know, we all had a good cackle. And and then to come back and then work alongside Aaron Faso in Coconut. What was that? Coconut. It was Coconut Detective. Coconut.
Right.
I can't remember what it was called. But anyway, I turned out to be the bad guy in it. But it was so fun to do, and we were you know fans of it as well, especially Black Force.
Oh, yes.
Very very funny.
Oh yeah, very fun. Great TV program.
It was.
Very very good. But here you are again with Aaron in High Country. So tell me a bit about this new series that's coming up. In just a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah, 19th of March. Very nervous,
a
you know.
Double episode to start with. Gosh.
Yep, on binge, Foxtel.
Yes.
So, no, very excited about the project. Marcia Gardner and John Ridley are the creators, and they also were the team behind Wentworth with Sue Edwards and Pino.
Amenta.
And so when Wentworth was finishing, Marcia called me into the room and she said, oh, we've got an idea. And I said, oh, yeah. And she said, would you be interested in playing a detective, another police officer, in a show we're going to, you know, shoot up in the High Country. And I went, oh, yeah, you know, if you get it up, give me a call. 6 months later, she gave me a call. She said, we got it up. And I went, oh, Bane, they got that show up. So, you know, but I love the fact that they were going to use the high country on the Victorian side. I know how beautiful that was, you know, looking at locations when we were doing the film for Drover's Wife. And
it's around Jamison, isn't it?
Yeah, Jamison and Mount Buller. We shot a little bit up there.
Beautiful.
So it was beautiful to come back, and that was a big draw card, you know. And Marcia talked about this, the land being a part of the character. Of course it is when people go up there and go missing. It also sort of is an identifier for my character, Andy. There's a storyline through her story that is unravelled as the mysteries unravel her life. And that's what I like about it is as the crimes unravel, you understand more and you learn more about Andy. And so it's not just the detective going to find whodunit.
It's more
depth to it. You know, my story sort of unfolds as you go through. It was amazing to work with Sarah Wiseman, Ian McElhinney.
He was out of Games and Thrones and Jerry Girls.
Yes.
An amazing UK actor. He's from Belfast. He lives there. So he's a heavy duty Irishman.
Oh, yeah, that would have been mischief.
No, and he was just great.
He was awesome. Like when we did the Zoom reads, he'd just come on and say the words. And I just turned to the director and I said, you should have shot that. Everyone, you know, and everyone was sort of mesmerized and it all go quiet. And then I go, whoops, sorry, that's my line, you know. He was just amazing, such a beautiful man. And we had so much fun, you know. It was very nerve-wracking, but when he first made his first mistake, I went, oh, thank goodness, mate. you're human like the rest of us. He said, oh, don't worry, there'll be more to come, you know. And I went, oh, cool.
Yeah.
And we just had a lovely time.
Because you've got to get that chemistry, haven't you, between each other. That shows up on screen as well.
Yeah. And, you know, and I just hope the Australian audience do get behind Australian stories. It's important that we support our Australian stories. It's important that we, with that support, by just turning your TV on, is helping not only the people that are in front of the cameras, like the writer, you know, the actors, then you've got your writers, your directors, but you're also helping our crews to stay employed.
Yeah. But these streaming services, such as Binge, which is on in March 19th, a double episode that's coming up, Binge, and people like that are looking for content, aren't they?
Yeah. Yes.
That must be helpful for you.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yes,
absolutely.
Well,
but we do need our Australian audience to turn on and support us.
Yeah, you need good content, don't you?
Yeah.
Aussie content.
We're about to start shopping around the Drover's Wife TV idea. It's called I Am Molly. It's a premium limited series idea, 8x1 hour apps, and it's the next instalment of Drover's Wife.
Can I guess? Is it about the kids? Because we all want to know what happens to the children.
Yes, but set in 2020.
Oh, wow.
You go backwards with Molly's great-great-great-great-granddaughter.
Ah.
So you start with what we call Molly 2020.
Yeah.
So the Molly that you're familiar with is Molly 1893.
Yes.
You know,
now you move forward.
Yes.
Oh, and then we come back.
And it's like Roots in reverse.
Yeah. Right.
And you go through this dynasty of amazing women.
You find out.
And everybody else associated with them. But you go through back through the generations and history, you know, the Australian history, but told through a different prism now.
Right.
You know, not the one that we may have learned in a textbook at
high
school in the 70s or 80s.
Well, we didn't learn. That's the point.
The trouble.
That's what I missed. And I'm really disappointed I didn't learn. I learned more outside of school with my mates than I did in school. It's a shame.
So we go through the civil rights and stolen wages and the Second World War and the Depression and all of those sorts of things.
Brilliant.
And through these characters, but mainly through these amazing women, the 67 referendum, but told from a blackfella's perspective.
Yeah,
but there's also the modern story too that keeps bubbling on the surface.
Yeah, that's the A story.
Yeah.
And as they go back, we dive into, you know.
And you find out what happens to the kids. And it is exciting. Like, it was exciting. We've had a writer's room to get sort of the outlines and just the imagination of some of the things will blow people away, you know, where Delphi comes from and Picasso drew her in Paris. So
she was the little girl in the,
film.
Who ends up picking up with a French landscape artist in the snowy
mountains. Don't give too much away.
Spoiler alert.
Don't give too much away.
You can imagine.
Well, the thing is, we can watch High Country now, which will be on Binge, March 19th. I think Drover's Wife, the story of Molly Johnson, is still on SBS On Demand.
Yes.
It was only on Netflix recently, trending.
Oh,
so it's still floating around.
We like to hear our own stories.
Yeah, exactly. And David, we just come back from Japan.
Yes, I was going to mention that.
Amazing.
What was the reaction like over there?
Unbelievable.
Really?
Unbelievable. It sold out. There was professors, students of, you know, film and television. There's also a feminist, you know, women there that were studying feminism, and they just, it was just the Q&A was next level. It was really awesome, and just loved being over there as part of the
inaugural Australian First Nations Film Festival.
Oh,
the Australian Embassy set it up.
Yes.
So, and, you know, they wanted to see how it go, and they went, well, it looks like we've got a festival on our hands.
Well, I hope that continues year after year.
It's still got life in it. You know, it aired in 2022, did it?
Where?
No, Drover's Wife, just in general.
When did it come out? It was launched in 21.
There you go.
Yeah, it came out in 21.
He's the man that knows
we were trying to, the black arts are when do you roll a film out during a epidemic, COVID. And so
But
it will premiere in 2020 at South by Southwest, which is a huge film festival in Austin, Texas.
Yeah.
And then here in Australia.
But what's beautiful, it's still going 4 years later. Yeah. We're still getting screenings. People still want to see it. It's trending on Netflix and it's still on.
And people are seeing it. We were just on a Zoom call with an American showrunner recently, and she said, I just want to let you know, Leah, at the end of the conversation, I saw The Drover's Wife. This is in America. This is in America. And she said, unbelievable, amazing. I just needed to tell you that.
Okay.
So it's great.
Are you going to take it over there, or are you going to sort of chop it around?
Samuel Goldwyn picked it up over there.
Yeah, we've done it.
So they've done it, but the Poms loved it.
I can't keep up with you both.
Mate, they called me Leah Eastwood, and I dropped the mic and walked away. And I said, that's a dream to work with him.
That's what I want to ask you about, too. Working with Sigourney Weaver.
Yes.
Now, this was a childhood hero, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, well, I was 14 when I saw the first film of Alien. So in Mergen, I know Aliens came out in 1979, I think. So by the time it got to Mergen in 1984.
On the old VHS.
I hired the Video Easy store, the $10 recorder, got the film, watched it with some mates, and just thought she was awesome. She's tall. She had curly hair like me. She was a strong woman.
She was in charge.
Yes. And I just went, wow, look at her. Yeah. So then I knew that there was a second film coming out. So I was walking around Mergen going, how can I get a letter to Hollywood? And people went, what? I said, I need to tell this woman, Sigourney Weaver, that I need to play her daughter, you know. But little did I know that it was all done and dusted and was going to be out soon. And when the producers for Lost Flowers of Alice Hart rung up and offered me the role.
Stunning.
Thank you.
Yes.
Offered me the role of Twig. And I sort of, I don't know, I was having a day and I said to my agent, oh, who's in it? You know, who's in it? Yeah. I'm tired. Yeah. And then they went, Sigourney Weaver. I went, yep. Nothing more said. I would just went, yep. Does she need her bags carried, water? You know, and she was amazing. And so, you know, she is 6'1". She's 72 now. She won't mind me saying that. Mate, she stood her height. She held her ground. She threw herself down on the ground when she had to, you know, when the scene where she falls over just in case people haven't seen it, give anything away.
Okay.
But, you know, she went down on this tiny thin mattress. There was mud, there was water. I said, Sigourney, do you want a bigger mattress to fall on? She said, she looked around and she whispered, she goes, Leah, just help me up. I said, I got you. You know, and then.
So no great. How great thou art.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
She
got into it. And even in there, there's another scene where a man beats her, mate. She was all up for the rough and the tumble of the fight sequences, and just a trooper and just a lovely lady, absolutely obsessed with kangaroos. And there's a scene where I come in and I get up her. We're up in Alice's room, and I say we should bring some of her mother's memorabilia into the room. And Sigourney's looking off out the window. We did the rehearsal and it all went well, and we said, all right, we'll shoot the next one. And I walk in and Sigourney turns around and there's this, you know, she sort of has a little knees buckle, and I went, okay, what's going on here? And she, different energy. And we finished the scene and she goes, oh, they said cut. And she goes, oh, Leah, I'm so sorry. And I go, why? What? Yeah, I know. What happened? You know, you gave me this different energy. I thought you were just, having a go at me. She goes, no. She said, I saw a kangaroo. And I said, did you? And she said, yeah, that red thing down there. I said, Sigourney, I told you, red kangaroos are in Alice Springs. They're black and grey up here in Scone. And she goes, well, what is it? I haven't got my glasses on. I said, it's a cow. And, you know, beautiful. She was so funny. And there was another scene, won't give it away, just in case people haven't seen it. But we're on the veranda. You might know if you remember it.
Yeah.
Towards the end of the ep. And she goes, Leah, if I see. She goes, is it kangaroo o'clock? And I pretended I looked up at the sun and went, yeah, it's 4:30, mate. They'll be down for water along the river. You know, being the Aussie I was. And she said, well, she goes, Leah, if they come, I'm going. I said, you can go. Just make sure it's on my close-up and leave quietly. She goes, okay.
Fantastic. Look, I am so much looking forward to seeing High Country, which is on Binge. I've mentioned that it's on March 19th, double episode coming up.
It's very good, mate.
Oh, yeah. Mate,
and
I
it looks
wait.
Amazing. Yeah. You saw the trailer.
I've seen the trailer. Incredible. We played a little bit of it at the intro. Yeah. People are just going to love this. I know they are.
Yeah.
And it really is lovely to have you both in the studio, but especially the fact that you're telling our stories.
Yes.
Thank you both. Bain Stewart and Leah Purcell, thank you both for being here and reminding us, you know, who we are, who we really are in this country. It's great. It's success, absolutely deserving. Absolutely deserved.
Thank you, David, and thank you for your support, mate. You've been with us on the ride for a while, so we appreciate
over
coming
20
in.
Years, mate.
Yeah.
Yeah, easy.
I feel old now.
Yeah, no, but that's how long it's been, mate.
Incredible. Yeah. Thank you, guys.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.